Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on a smart speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are defying gravity in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a frustrating night at the Amex on Monday as one of the most abject refereeing performances that we've seen this season, coupled with Bournemouth's game-spoiling tactics, saw us earn a point towards our hopes of European qualification. It was a game, however, that was lit up by what will surely be this year's goal of the season as Babis Kostoulas' spectacular overhead kicked earned us that point. Onwards and upwards then, and this weekend we take the short trip to Craven Cottage to face a Fulham side who've been decent of late, but they've never lost to us at home in the Premier League, so surely it's time for that to change, right? In other news, congratulations Brighton, your reward for knocking Manchester United out of the FA Cup is a trip to Anfield at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night on Valentine's Day. Who said romance was dead? Anyway, joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And alongside Alan is a man who is the greatest. He's fantastic. Wherever there is financial danger, he'll be there. Please, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kieran Maguire. Hello. Welcome back, Kieran. How are you, my friend?
I'm feeling suitably uplifted after a very, very kind introduction, AD. It's,
700
most becoming. Thank you so much.
700 shows we've done together. I never get an intro like that at all. Yeah. Joining me today is some bloke, and we've also got God.
Well, at least I remembered to mention your name today.
Yeah, but you haven't remembered to put your on-air light on, have you?
I haven't. No, I have. Hang on. We're on air. There we go.
Okay. Who's going to start with this? By the way, can I just point out, chaps, I haven't bought a bleep machine, so please be careful.
Kieran, I mean, let's start with Monday night then. I mean, firstly, as a football finance mod, let me just remind you that football isn't a TV show. Monday night football is an aberration. It shouldn't exist, right?
Not if you're the Premier League and have sold the rights for a squillion quid to Sky for the privilege of being able to put Jamie Carragher and Thierry Henry into a studio and deliver some ratings, though I suspect the audience would have been tapering by the minute, given the quality of the fare that was on view. It was a frustrating match. I think it's a very, very strange Premier League this season, and today's fun packed stat is that if you take a look at all 20 clubs who are currently there, not a single one of them is on a winning run of more than one game consecutively.
That is trippy. More to the point, how did you know? Please don't tell me this is one of your spreadsheets, is it?
It is one of my spreadsheets, yes.
Yeah.
I keep a myriad. I've got about 300 of them.
He uses spreadsheets for curtains.
He does. But I mean, Kieran, I mean, bearing in mind that this fixture last season was probably one of the best games of the season, this one didn't follow suit, did it?
It didn't. And I think that's actually reflective of the Premier League as a whole. We've sort of reversed into set piece ball rather than football. And every club is fully aware of the tactics of the opponents. So the first aim appears to be to try to cancel out the opposition. And it ends up in like one of those sort of rather tedious draws if you play chess, where you just aim to swap each other's pieces and you're left with nothing. And the game just peters out.
Yeah, neutralised.
And that's what we've seen. If you take a look at the sort of the last four TV matches that were shown, Friday evening was Forest versus Arsenal. That was a dreadful 0-0. Then we had, I mean, the Manchester United City game was decent, but the two Sunday games, they were pretty poor as well. And then we got to be honest, yes, it was a poor game. Yes, we can moan about Bournemouth's tactics. The referee didn't have a great game. But I struggle to think of a Brighton player that put in more than a 6 out of 10 performance either.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we were talking to our good friend Andy Bass about this last night, and basically there did seem to be an awful lot of passengers in the team last night, and we've said this before. I mean, obviously you can only beat what's in front of you, and obviously Bournemouth had a game plan, which was not to play at all, it seems. But it was, there was a lack of energy. I mean, the first 10 minutes was good, but after that.
Well, I mean, that's the point. In the first half, for all the fact that we're going to sort of have a good rant about Bournemouth's behaviour in the second half, in the first half, after those 10 minutes, I thought they rang rings around us and actually were, and whisper it, I thought actually very attractive to watch. They played it well. They got forward quickly. They broke very well. Their passing was good. There's a lot of pace in that team. And yet, when you get to the second half, and yet, like you say, there's a lot of not, a lot of great, not much energy in the first half, and yet probably for so many games for us this season, it's the substitutes that have come on and done the business. Now that's not to say that Fabian Hertzl, the old adage of he doesn't know his first 11 or he doesn't know his starting 11, but as I've said on here many times, it's about making the best use of the 16 players that you've got available to play. Well, 20 available, but 16 that can come on and play at any one time. So, given that the result isn't important at 30 minutes, it's at 90, or in our case, what did they have, an extra 30? No, an extra 16 minutes yesterday. I'm gonna actually just counter your point one point there. I thought that Minteh had his fella on toast last night. I thought he was fantastic when he came on.
Yeah, I mean, when he came on, he was great. But I mean, but it's the team that started that didn't have, because I mean,
How many
it was
times have
un.
we seen this? How
But,
many
I mean,
times have we seen this?
it was unusual last night to see Carew being so lackluster, and I mean, I think he was being played slightly out of position. I think they were trying to play him as a 10, which didn't quite work. But his runs were he was running down blind alleys. He wasn't.
His passing was atrocious.
Yeah, it was just unusual to see that from him. And whisper it, but Pascal Gross was he caught that bug as well. His passes seemed to be behind,
And
but behind everybody.
yet, in the first 2 minutes, 10 minutes, as you pointed out, we were zinging it about a bit. But again, like I say, I think as Kieran's pointed out there, a lot of teams, I mean, they'll say they one of the reasons, right, sorry, I'm going to get my point out here. There's a lot of stuff that's gone on about how Hertzler isn't the same as De Zerbi, but I think that the answer, if that had any credence to it, is because there is a similarity between Hertzler and De Zerbi. I don't think Hertzler is quite so kamikaze as De Zerbi, but as Kieran points out, every team susses everyone out after a year. Now, for instance, Sunderland are having a good year because they haven't been in the top division for a while, and people aren't necessarily used to what they're doing. And maybe even underrate them as they come on. But now we have to be, well, everyone has to be that much more imaginative. And certainly Bournemouth were imaginative.
Are you being
Am I being cynical?
you
Absolutely.
are
But I want to
being
let Kieran,
cynical.
because Kieran's got a greater lexicon than I, so I'm going to let him describe, well, what he felt of the, let's go for the first half first, mate.
I agree entirely with you. I was really impressed with Bournemouth. After that first 10 minutes, they were superb on the counter. I mean, the goal, and we can talk about whether it was a penalty or not all day long, all night long. But ultimately, it was given, and we've seen them given, whether we like it or not. I was in the north stand. I thought it was harsh. If you look at it from 10 angles, 9 angles, it says it wasn't a penalty, and one angle says it was. So it did seem a harsh decision. But at the same time, that's ignoring the fact that Bournemouth had a couple of very good chances where they should have done better
Yeah, Evan
in the
Nilsson hit
first
the
half.
post, didn't he? Mind you, that was offside. They fluffed his lines with a header, which he could have doubled the lead. But okay, well let's talk about, I mean, the penalty. I mean, first it was a foot race between Tavernier and Karu Mitoma, which Tavernier won, and he put it in the box for Adli. Adli goes over. The ref says it's a dive. He gives us a free kick and books Adli. Now, looking at all the replays, that was the correct decision, and there wasn't any reasonable doubt that that was the correct decision. So why were VAR, why did they send into the screen? Because that's re-refereeing the game, which is basically what VAR is not meant to do.
I'm entirely in agreement with you. I felt that their striker was going down before he came into contact with Bart. So was there contact? Yes. But would he have gone down anyway? Yes. Was he in control of the ball? No. And as you rightly said, the purpose of VAR is twofold. First of all, it is to identify clear and obvious errors. And the fact that people still can't agree whether it was a penalty or not 24 hours later suggests that it wasn't a clear and obvious error. And the second one, and this is sort of, I guess, is where my sort of hat comes into being. I'm fully aware, having spoken to some sports lawyers, that there is a danger at one point in time, and we've not reached that point yet, that if a club gets relegated and we don't have VAR, it will say, we lost a couple of games due to poor refereeing decisions. There was an alternative to that, which is VAR, which, had it been used, we would have got those decisions. And therefore, we're going to demand compensation off the Premier League. And you're going to end up in courts and tribunals and similar activities, which is going to cost everybody a fortune. And it's going to destroy sort of many of the good things. You know, there are many great things about the Premier League at present, even though I think it's probably the poorest season that I can recall overall since the Albion got there, because of this cancel out culture that exists at present. But some of these things fly under the radar. You know, VAR, was it brought to help referees? Yes, it was. But there was also an underlying threat of legal action. If the football authorities weren't seen to be moving with the times. We have the equivalent of VAR in tennis, we have it in rugby, we have it in cricket. So therefore, to not have it in football, I think is a bit of an anachronism. The application of VAR is the thing which grinds my gears.
I think it
It
grinds
takes
everyone's,
too long,
mate.
If there was a 30-second cutoff, if it had to be said, right, clear and obvious error, we should be able to tell it within 30 seconds, then fine. Offside, I have no issue with. You're either offside, and even if it's by a millimetre, there's always going to be a, you know, if you say it's got to be 2 inches, well, there's what about 2 inches in a millimetre? You know, if somebody, so I don't have an issue with the offside, although it should be sorted quicker. Decisions like last night, they make it farcical.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is the point I was exactly making last night. The notion of VAR, whether it's, you know, football being out of touch and by not having it, but, you know, the notion of it, and I think that probably the scope it's got at the moment is frankly as far as it really needs to go, because there's talk of it's going to be deciding corners, it's going to be decide. I think there was an incident last night where I think one of our players was flattened, but because it was outside the area, VAR couldn't intervene. And I'm thinking, well, okay, if people then start getting the arse about that, then at which point is the referee just going to sit in Stockley Park and not actually run around the pitch for every game? So I think that the scope of it is absolutely fine, and then the ideas and the merits behind it are absolutely fine.
Well, but
It is the application of it, and it then leads to a further point, taking Kieran's point a bit further, is why is the application of it so poor? I mean, given its remit, given its notion of and the rules and the laws behind it, you know, the procedures are absolutely crystal clear as to what it can and
yes.
can't do. In which case, why is it being so, well, actually, that's probably unfair. Why is it being applied so haphazardly? I mean, if I'd said incompetently, then no, there are cases when, of course, it works right, but there are other cases where it clearly doesn't. All right, last night, you can make it contentious, but you know, the referee, like it or lump it, whether they're good or not, still has to be the god of the pitch. In
And it wasn't last night.
which case, who is VAR? It's not a video additional referee, it's a video assistant referee. What was Jarrod Gillett, yes, him, what was he doing trying to effectively turn over the original decision? And more to the point, what was Paul Tierney doing going along with it. And I can't help thinking there's a hive mind amongst the officials, and I'm talking about all the officials across the Premier League. There's a hive mind that as soon as you're called to the monitor, you go with VAR because you don't want to be seen to
We have seen
undermining
them
him.
stick with their original decisions. We have.
Well,
I mean,
no, you
it
just
turns
don't want to
out
be.
that Gillet is not only just a useless coat, it's a useless VAR as well. But it's like we've said it before on this show. Football was, and the laws of football were not designed to be micromanaged in the way that they actually are. With the goal line technology, that's black and white. With the automated, semi-automated VAR, whether that's onside or onside, that is, you can see that is a
Even
black and
that's
white
taking too
decision.
long.
But when it comes down to something that's simply in the opinion of the referee, that's exactly that. It's an opinion. And you know, me and Al, Kieran, we have opinions. Quite often, they're not the same opinion, which is, but you know, and that's pretty much what happened with this penalty thing last night. The two refer the VAR and Tin and the actual on-field referee had a different opinion. It just happens that one of them happened to get the correct decision initially, and he didn't have the courage of his convictions to actually back himself.
It's easier to not back yourself. And that's another concern of mine is that VAR has become a convenient get out clause. I honestly think he made the right decision. Now, could you have perhaps taken away the yellow card? Possibly, but I still argue that the player was aiming to fall before he reached Bart. Did Bart touch him? Yes, he did, but he was already starting to tumble.
Did he touch Bart or did Bart touch him? And that's then we're into then we're going to all have to sit down on the couch and say, well, but tell us about the relationship with your mother. You're going to have these philosophical discussions, which obviously they have to be made there and then. But like I say, there is that hive mind of all the referees, of all the officials staying together that as soon as I can only think of one. I'm sure there's been other situations, but certainly in a Brighton game where a referee's been called over to the monitor. I said, I think this is I want you to look at this as a potential foul, and the referee's gone, no, it's fine. And the one I'm thinking of is the build up to Tarik Lamptey's goal up at Spurs about 3 4 years ago, something like
Oh,
that.
yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, VAR was called over, and the referee went, no, I'm fine with that. Oddly enough, I actually thought that our player, I think it was Solly March, I think our player did foul him, but rock and roll. Us getting a break at Spurs, who knew?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're quite right in that sense, AD, that. I'd say the opinion of the referee, all right, clearly Tierney and Gillett had two different opinions on this. So why didn't Tierney stay with his on-field one? What made him change his mind? Because
I think it's a
like
classic
as
umpire's call. A classic umpire's call, and
absolutely, yes.
we give it to Tierney.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean,
Okay, I mean,
after.
look, we can't take it back, and unfortunately, I mean, Bart got close to the penalty kick, but he didn't
It
save
was
the
a
penalty
very good
kick.
penalty. That
Um,
was a very good penalty, absolutely.
so to they go 1-0 up, they nearly make it 2, but we did have opportunities before half time. Jack Grealish would have had a header that was saved.
Well, there was earlier in the game, there was Gruyter had a shot, and I'm going to have a bit of a downer on Gruyter. I thought that actually, for all the people that Kieran said he couldn't think of more than 6 out of 10, then can I give him a -6? It was like the game, I think it was West Ham. Oh, sorry, against West Ham here, where bless him, Jorginho Rutter, anything and everything he tried didn't come off. The only thing that didn't come off, that should have come off, was himself. So when Hertzler made the substitutions and brought Minté on, and like I said, we'll discuss it in a minute. He had a great deal of fun. It was just the complete antithesis of what he was trying to do. I have no problem with his tenacity, with the fact of his enthusiasm and the fact he was trying stuff. But sometimes there are times when if someone could reverse their lobotomy and actually get them to think a bit rather than
He's 20
just,
years old.
sorry.
He's 20, what, 21 years old. I think we're harsh on these very young men at
Yeah, but
times.
he yeah, if he's old enough, he's good enough. If he's good enough, he is old enough, whatever it might be. And I
We'll
get
come to
that.
that in a minute.
Well, yeah.
Okay,
No,
well.
I get that, but he has spent his time last, was it year and a half now? training with us, and it's like he played. He's not the only one. I know I'm picking on him. It's like everything they've learned and done in training is forgotten the moment he's crossed that white line.
Yeah. I mean, I find it. I find Brian very, very frustrating. But I kind of liken it to another player we're going to talk about in a bit, which is Facundo Buonanotte, who has quite constantly played out of position. I mean, never got to see the best out of him in his actual proper position, and and he often flattered to deceive because he was playing in the wrong position. I think
I don't think you could say that about Gruda.
Well, I mean, he's a 10. He floats in and around behind the striker. He's definitely not a wide player. His best work comes in the middle, where he can actually like influence the game and get shots away and use his little tricks there. But he's not very good at beating a player and getting a cross in, which is basically what
I
is.
refer you to Tierney versus Gillett in that regard.
Well, this
Differing
is true.
opinions.
Well, okay. I mean, look, we've gone to town on Brian before. We know there's a player there.
Oh,
I'm waiting. I'm
I've got every
excited to
hope in
see
him being
what he
much
actually
so much
becomes. I
better.
think he will be that player eventually. But one player that I do want to talk about is actually one of the substitutes, and Kieran, Carlos Baleba came on the pitch, and it was the real Carlos Baleba. It was him. He was back.
Yes, I think anybody who's been keeping a quiet eye on AFCON will have seen he's made some man of the match performances or player of the match performances. His drive, his power, certainly were evident there, and that was very much. I mean, the first time he touched the ball, he just bulldozed one of their players, recovered, and then set off and drove up the pitch in the way which managed to get a crowd which was, plenty of empty seats last night, and a crowd which had been silenced by what they'd been watching for around about an hour. He brought them back to life along with Yacoubi Minté, and the last 30 minutes was far more promising. And again, it goes back to, I think Hertzler himself says, that we've got intensity, and if you look at the data from the match, we had far more passes than Bournemouth. Our passes were far more accurate. We had two thirds of the possession compared to their one third, and so on. But there was little penetration until the substitutions were made, and there was little to get the crowd up and excited. We didn't even have the light show to inspire us
Well,
pre-match.
that's the thing that
What a
really made me want
shame.
to. That's the thing that re
I
that's the
had.
thing that really made me want to boo.
Yeah,
You know, if
well,
we can
I
we.
was ready for it. I had my Dulux colour chart. There was like, oh, there's apple white, there's diamond white. Is
There's
that
Ben White.
pearl white? It's like, oh, look, all the whites you could possibly have. How wonderful!
What was it
But
supposed to be
I
anyway?
don't know. I look, they're going to do it at some point, so
Oh
we
dear.
will find out. And I'm excited to see it. But
Hang on, hang on, hang on. That begs the point. Do we have an evening game coming up?
Yeah, we've got Arsenal.
A deep joy.
Oh, good. Well,
Arsenal on the Wednesday night.
it could happen. Rather than Freed from Desire, we could have the light show. That will be good.
Yes, yeah,
Oh,
nice.
all the whites.
No, but
All.
sorry, back to Believer. Yeah, he
Yeah,
was.
so I mean, it was a delightful. But I mean, one thing. This is something we talk about on the show a lot. One thing that does get the crowd going is a bad referee and cheating. Frankly, there was. I mean, I've been inundated with all sorts of memes this morning of like Saving Private Ryan and loads of Bournemouth players dying on the pitch.
I'm convinced that Belieber went onto the pitch with a machine gun. That's how much they were falling over. I mean, it was like the Somme.
It got to the point where it was just embarrassing. They weren't even trying to hide it, but the ref was just falling for it every single time. And it's like, they
But
weren't even head injuries. And the problem
the
is.
referee has no choice. And this is again, it's a classic example of unintended consequences. That there has been a directive. Again, this comes down from a safeguarding issue as far as players' welfare is concerned. Is that if there is a danger of a head injury, then the referee is an obligation to stop the game. Now, as a result of that, what we have is that players are being coached to cheat. In order to break up play, you feign a head injury, or you feign cramp, and that is being seen more and more. And let's be honest. Bournemouth are not the only club to have done it. Brighton of Albion have been known to do it as well when we've been ahead, although it's a long time since we've been ahead in many matches. And it's certainly quite prevalent across the rest of the Premier League. So it's a cultural issue, and it is being driven by coaching. And I don't think the people who are at the top of the clubs, they're not being shouted down on this. They are the people that are encouraging the players to cheat.
Yeah, and our thing is the worrying thing is that there isn't a kind of reverse this. I think there was one thing that was considered that when the goalkeeper goes down, or even when a player goes down, the players didn't even come over to the touchline. This was about sort of trying to break up Albion's rhythm, more than anything. But there's other times where if a team's not playing well, then overcome the players to the touchline. Now, if a player does go down. And it's, well, even if it's not dubious, I think there should be a kind of a ban on players being allowed to go over to their technical area. If it's a hot day and they really need some water, then either the water is brought on for them or they go to a particular station on the other side of the pitch. Yes, it's off the pitch, but they go on the other side of the pitch. And or it's understood that a coach or someone from the technical area is not allowed to talk to the players. Now, I know that goes against the grain, but it's what is otherwise obvious is that there's a coaching session going on here because one, the team, like I say, the team wants to break up the other team's rhythm, and or the team isn't playing well, and the coach wants to get quite a few ideas across to them. That's not really in the spirit of the game as well. But I mean, Bournemouth weren't even subtle about it. That's the point. You've seen some teams do it now and again, but there wasn't even a subtlety to it. Someone was on the far side of the pitch. It's difficult to feign a head injury when they're not even in close to the game. It's someone arbitrarily kind of over there just falling down. So it's cramp. And I don't know, perhaps you can correct me, Kieran. Is cramp a big enough reason for a referee to stop the game?
No, it's not, because it's
So it's
just a
only the
muscle
head
spasm.
injury.
There is no long-term danger to the player in terms of their welfare as a result of cramp. And what also concerns me is that, okay, we've only played football to a certain level, but we are talking about elite athletes. Elite athletes should be able to run 10 or 11 kilometers in 90 minutes very, very easily due to the stop-start nature of the game. And as somebody that used to be quite a keen runner, if I can run a marathon, if I can run a 20 miler and I'm a 60-year-old fat bloke, and don't get cramp, then a professional footballer should not be getting cramp within a 90-minute game. I also think you're absolutely right to highlight the resurgence of goalkeeper injuries or goalkeeper faked injuries, because again, this is exploitation of the rules. The referee cannot make the goalkeeper go off the pitch for 30 seconds, so therefore it's a great way of breaking up play. So therefore perhaps the authorities should say, if a goalkeeper gets a serious injury and has to be seen by one of the physios, then an outfield player has to go off for 30 seconds. And that outfield player should be nominated by the opposition.
That'd be brilliant. Can it be
Yeah.
can we be nominated by the crowd? We can use the app for the light show.
That's right. And that would be a fantastic use of technology.
Yeah, just the app, we could all come up with a giant number 24 or something coming
Yeah.
across it. That would
Do you
be
know what? I
brilliant.
like that idea, Kieran. I mean, I really can't see it happening. Or at the very least, the referee just points to one of them arbitrarily. I don't know. I mean, obviously, then there's a, but then, yeah, each and every consideration has a pitfall, which, whilst it sounds great on the, I don't know the extent to which you've thought it through, Kieran, but you know full well that there will be a pitfall which someone, because that's the nature of their reasoning, will try and find a loophole for and
Of course.
exploit.
Okay. All right, look, let's move on to what was I can't see this not being goal of the season. It was sensational,
Can I
Kieran.
just say, in that case, AD, I can, and all I would say is, it's a goal that he hasn't scored or someone hasn't scored yet. And let's face it, it's him. Because if he practices that much doing that, he's going to do it again.
Well, he tried it and nearly got
booked. He nearly took someone's head off doing that. I know.
So yeah, remember Ali Jahanbakhsh scored a similar goal against Chelsea.
I've got that here.
And he tried that for the next 6 months.
I mean, the question I've got here was like, whose was better, Ali J's or Babis?
Oh, Babis by
distance. Babis, but because he controlled the ball and then set himself up, it was a really good knockdown from JP Van Hecker. And I think the way that he teed himself up was superb.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's so exciting. He's so exciting. I mean, I know we're drip feeding him at the moment, and I think we're all hungry to see more of him. But he's just so tenacious. He's strong. I just can't wait to see more of him.
Yeah, well, I think I saw him. I went to the two League Cup games at the start of the season. I think he came on one of them. What I've really noticed is that he has bulked up.
Yes,
incredibly since those first signs. He looked quite as slender, a bit Peter Ward like in that respect. Yeah, when he first came to the club, but he's ripped.
Yeah, and also there is actually he's got a wicked streak of outhousery in him as well.
Oh yes.
No, then. So I mean, it's.
I think was it West Ham? I could be wrong here. I think it was West Ham. A recent away game, he came on and within 10 seconds was booked.
Yes, it was at West Ham. It was indeed. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, I like to. So, but that is that was the 10th goal we scored this season in the 84th minute or later.
And I think we've also scored more goals from substitutes than any other team in the Premier League.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That does sound about
Which,
right.
Which, in the great scheme of things, really doesn't matter. I mean, it's a great stat, but it's a bit like the stat of, well, I had a ham sandwich at lunchtime.
Okay. Well, we move on more than that. It's another point to the total, and we move on to Fulham. Yay, can't wait for that
one. Yeah, but I mean, another thing that also happened is it denied Bournemouth doing the double over us, and that would have been awkward.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show, Adam, is brought to you in association with the wonderful Flowers Unlimited. Now, we're coming to the end of January, and what comes after January, Al?
I think FA Cup exit.
February. That will be February.
Sorry, and Kieran, what are you saying? What did you say, Kieran?
I said a large credit card bill.
Yes, as well. Yeah, which usually turns up on Burns night, doesn't it? Yeah.
But before Burns night is Valentine's Day, and what a day! What an opportunity! What
can
to
I just
get
say
along to Flowers Unlimited, Al?
Or can I just say Burns night is actually only in about 5 days' time? But yes, yeah, so 14th of February, which we're going to talk about in far less charming terms presently, is Valentine's Day. But as Flowers Unlimited say, whatever your reason for sending flowers, gifts, we can help. If it's a birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. I think actually, frankly, Bournemouth owe us a bunch of flowers for that performance. If it's a wedding or corporate event, our team will come up with something to wow you. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide the service and quality you really deserve. I've just read that off the flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk website. Do head over there for all your flowers and chocolates and champagne and other goodies that you might want to celebrate with someone, whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, or, like I say, the imposed Valentine's Day. So go to that website or go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And thanks very much indeed to Dave Costa for sponsoring the Albion Roar.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Yeah. Now, Kieran, where do we find you today?
I'm in my apartment in Liverpool today.
Well, that is, it's very lucky that you've got an apartment in Liverpool, isn't it? Because very soon, on the aforementioned Valentine's Day, just to prove that romance isn't dead, the powers that be have decided that an 8 o'clock kickoff is appropriate. Now, I've tried to book a hotel in Liverpool for after the game, and I've been shoveled out to Birkenhead, which is, like, if you're about to have a dirty weekend in Brighton, that is the equivalent of being sent to a bedsit next to the New Haven incinerator.
So, all back to Kieran's then afterwards, is
all
it?
Back to Kieran.
You're about the 23rd person that's contacted me today about that particular issue.
And some of them even know you.
Like I say, yeah. I know you've said about, you know, Premier League clubs have sold their soul to TV, but what on earth has happened with the FA Cup then?
It's being driven by the FA's desire to generate further revenues. The nature of the split of the deal is that it's trying to maximise the number of matches which are shown. And I think there's a very good case for saying that the club which is, what, you know, fourth or fifth in the Premier League playing the club which is 12th, you know, intuitively that's not a good draw. Yeah, you know, that's not a good TV audience, but Liverpool and Manchester United in particular drive traffic, and the broadcasters are focused on eyeballs because eyeballs generate advertising revenues for them. And that's where we are in football today. The game has very much sold its soul to the broadcasters. And if you if you dance with the devil, guess who's calling the tune?
Yeah, it's just disappointing. I mean, obviously, I mean, if you want to win the FA Cup, you've got to beat some good teams along the way, unless you're Crystal Palace, of course. But it's just disappointing because, you know, we wanted a draw at home. We very rarely get draws at home. The last five draws in the cup have been absolutely.
Well, the last draw we had at home, we lost a bit on penalties. But no, the point I was going to, the thing I was going to mention here, and I've said this a few times, certainly in the Premier League, and obviously with the Premier League, certainly the attitude I'm sure is prevalent across the FA as well, is that one thing they didn't want to do was to use what they call the Sunday evening slot. Now, admittedly, our game against Manchester United was a half four kickoff, but they also wanted to use the Saturday evening slot very sparingly. So is this just a case of, sod it, let's use the Saturday evening slot just because we can?
Yeah, I think there's probably been a decision made that Brighton probably wouldn't travel in numbers anyway. Although I do think this is a fascinating. We've had the opportunity to play Manchester United and Liverpool in the FA Cup, and I didn't go to Manchester United. Part of the reason why I didn't go to Manchester United was that it was sort of a mini protest at the £55 tickets that were being charged. And whilst we're on the subject, huge credit to Tony Bloom and Paul Barber for the subsidised tickets for the match at Anfield. You know, £20 ticket. And £20 off a shirt if you want to buy one. You can, you know, that is very fair indeed. So I think the numbers that have already been sold, I think, are quite impressive, and we're only on day one of them being available. Liverpool are box office. Even a stuttering Liverpool are still box office as far as the broadcasters are concerned. So it would have been suggested to them that this would be valid, and therefore the FA just, you know, we've seen the FA show the backbone of a jellyfish on a number of occasions when it comes to decisions to do with the national team and the FA Cup, and also the failure to safeguard grassroots football, which is supposed to be its remit. So this is just further evidence of that.
Yeah. Okay, well, Kieran, speaking of saving people, I mean, there was I saw a photo of you of a man who I can't believe he's still around. I thought he came a cropper at the Amex on the opening day.
Oh, Billy Sharp.
Billy Sharp, he's alive and well and being taught by Kieran Maguire.
Yeah, it's really spooky. In the last 7 days, I've had correspondence with both Billy Sharp and Will Buckley. So both scorers of that opening day. And Will's now an agent, and Will is at the PFA Business School where I work on a freelance basis, and I was at the League Managers Association doing some work for them at St George's Park. And Billy Sharp, was it Billy Sharp? Huge credit to him. He's 39 years old. He's still banging them in. He's back at Doncaster. And he's a thoroughly nice young man.
Well, give us the lowdown. You mentioned about the fact that you're doing stuff at for the FA and for the League Managers Association. Sorry, the PFA and the League Managers Association. What is it you're doing?
Well, as far as the PFA are concerned, they feel that there is a bit of a blockage in terms of the inability of footballers to take positions other than that of coach or perhaps a physio or a managerial role.
Or a
So
publican, or a
therefore, sort of
publican, or a publican, yeah.
the strap line is dressing room to classroom to boardroom.
Right.
So I've been there now for sort of 2 or 3 years. They've set up their own business school. They've got accredited qualifications. I've taught quite a few ex-Albion players. So Ben Roberts, Tim Krul, who's absolutely brilliant, by the way, super smart guy. Behram Kayal, David Stockdale, who's gone out and bought a football club. So I regularly
Is it
chat to
something about
David.
goalies?
It does seem a bit weird about goalies. They've got a lot of footballers aren't given the credit that I think they deserve because
Hmm.
there is this rather sneering attitude towards the view that because they do something that we want to be able to do, that the odd player lets them down, but I can assure you the odd accountant and the odd lawyer probably lets down their professions as
Yeah.
well. So that's really good. And as far as the LMA is concerned, it's part again of their broader development. If you are a football manager, you're going to be in a room with people who are potentially going to sack you. So I teach them about the different types of ownership model. I talk to them about the implications of signing a player on a short and long term basis as far as their budgets are concerned, how to identify. If they're going for an interview to identify the strengths and weaknesses through a financial lens as well as you've got this sort of the cultural lens and the footballing lens as well of an individual club. And it's about empowering people, whether they're managers or coaches or players currently in their career. I've just been teaching Jordan Henson and Tyrone Mings for that. They've just done their qualifications. As well as former players, the likes of Paul Bracewell and Robbie Fowler.
There is actually something that occurred to me while you're saying all this is that I won't say what his response was, but we asked Guy Butters the same question when he was on a few weeks ago. Have you noticed a sea change at all in the attitude of the PFA since Mahéta Malango took over?
Yes, yeah, in my view.
Positively.
I know Mehetta on fairly good terms. There are a variety of issues that we discuss, and I also have got to know a guy called Jean-Louis Dupont, who is sort of famous as the Bosman lawyer. I'm working with Jean-Louis on another project, which could have huge implications as far as global football and the transfer market is concerned. He's acting on behalf of FIFPro, which is sort of the global players trade union, as well as people like Mehetta at the PFA. Compared to the previous regime, Mehetta is super professional. He does want to improve things for his members. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, but he certainly has, in my view, a vision, and he wants to improve the opportunities for his members to develop their careers, not only as professional footballers, but also to protect them. We've got these horrendous stats within, I think it's within 2 years, 40% of retired players are divorced. If you look at bankruptcy rates amongst former professional footballers, they're absolutely horrendous. If you take a look at the number of times that professional footballers are taken advantage of, sometimes by their colleagues in the dressing room, sometimes by their agents, and sometimes by somebody that they've been introduced to, because the nature of football is that football encourages football players not to think. because all it wants them to do is to focus on football and nothing else. And I think the union is trying to say, well, you're human beings, you're husbands and brothers and boyfriends and sons and dads as well. And we need to look at this. The huge issues in terms of mental health in terms of retired footballers is quite scary.
I mean, it's very easy to like look at the top level of like at Premier League level and see that the millions of pounds that go to those players, but that doesn't happen down in at the lower end. And those are the people the PFA look after as well. It's not just the millionaires; it's the people who are earning 200 quid a week playing for Scunthorpe or whatever.
That's right. And even if you take a look at places such as the National League, most National League clubs, they issue 10-month contracts. Players get a contract from sort of the 1st of July until the 30th of April, because that's when the season ends. And you don't get paid over the summer if you're just on effectively a 1-year deal. And I've spoken to quite a few players who have fallen out of the love with the game because they will say, I'm in the National League, or I'm in, even at League Two. The money at League Two at the bottom end isn't great either. And the club hasn't spoken to me about renewing my contract. I've got a wife. I've got a couple of kids because they are dads. That's what we get. They are husbands. They are boyfriends. They are partners. They do have mortgages. They do have car loans. And exactly. And as one said to me, I remember going into it was match three. It was three matches from the end of the season. I hadn't had my contract renewed, and I was going in for a 50-50. And I checked because I thought, I'm not sure I can get this. And if I get injured, if I'm out for 6 or 8 weeks, everybody's forgotten about me because there's this bun fight when the contracts expire on the 30th of June. So I think there are huge implications within the professional game
Was it
that we have to deal with.
Was it the PFA that set up, and I can't remember the name of the side, but there's some friendlies that took place in I think there was a couple in Lance at Lancing. It's like a football team of players who are out of contract
That's correct.
and cannot get a gig. Is that
Yeah,
something you're
because
familiar
Engeloo
with?
Wilder was playing for them.
Yeah, that's something that Mehetta has organised. He's trying to get these guys to still remember what they're good at, but also to give opportunities if there's scouts there, if there's managers there, to have it as a sort of a as a mini dating game. It's a bit like a blind date, and you've not forgotten about me, and this is what I can still do.
Okay,
So
we've
it
got
does, and I was
to
just going to
move it
say,
on now.
no, just his last one. So it does sound like, I mean, and the fellow's only been in place, what, 2, 3 years? It sounds like that, whatever it is he's trying to put in place, and like you say, he hasn't always got it right necessarily, but what he's trying to put in place has been done fairly rapidly. And when you consider, like you say, the previous incumbent who was there for a long time and just, I don't know, just let the gravy train pass over him, it looks like that this is a fellow who's dead serious about what he's doing.
Yeah, and remember, Mehetta's got experience as a CEO. He's trained as a lawyer. If try to get him on the Albion Raw. He does have connections with the club. He still talks with affection about his time at the Albion, and you will be impressed. I've got huge respect for him. There's 100 stories that I could tell you about the PFA prior to Mehetta arriving, which I won't talk because otherwise you'd be shut down forever.
I was about to say, we
Well,
can't afford the lawyers.
it's and there's those of 40 that last 12 seconds at the PFA, but it's moving
No.
swiftly on. Kieran, the club's accounts came out in January, and we posted an operating loss of 54.4 million pounds. So it's the first time we've posted a loss for a while, isn't it?
It is. And that's despite the fact that Brighton and Hove Albion had their second highest ever finish in the Premier League in the club's history as a professional football club. But I think it also reflects that to a certain extent you need to run to stay still financially. So the money coming into the club decreased by 13%. The wage bill was up quite substantially. The wage bill was up 18 million, which is what, 13, 14%. Why is that? Well, it goes back, and I hate this word, but I have to use it, the splurge that we saw at the start of 24-25 if you're going to spend £200 million on players. And yeah, we had all of that input of players in that sort of 20 to 30, and in the case of Jorginho, £40 million bracket. That has implications as far as the wage commitments are concerned. So the money going out, the overheads of running the club are going up because we're living in a world which has, again, unforeseen consequences in terms of transport costs, medical costs, material costs as a result of Ukraine war, as a result of global warming, as a result of there is still a post-Brexit, there's a post-Brexit hangover, but there's also a post-COVID hangover, which people don't see because we tend to forget about these things. But it's really tough. And once again, God bless Tony Bloom. Tony Bloom put in £110 million of his own cash into the Albion that season, A, to provide the funding for the transfers, and B, to keep the lights on. No
Yeah.
Tony,
When
no party.
it comes to him rebuilding the stadium, there's lots of stuff going on here. When did he put in the goon towers to shoot the Bournemouth players? I don't recall that happening in the plans.
But
Well,
okay,
that's
so I mean,
26, 27. We're not going to have a. Yeah, that's going to replace the pre-match light show.
yes,
So I mean, so
our own
both.
Squid Games.
In terms of the loss, I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, the big splurge because we had the opportunity to do it, and the market was standing still at that particular moment in time as well. So it was a good time to do it. That loss doesn't necessarily include. I know it doesn't include the transfers for the likes of João Pedro, for instance.
Yeah, Pedro was excluded. Adringa was excluded. There were one or two others as well. So yes, I'm expecting far better figures in 12 months'
And
time. And there is no danger about the Albion, apart from the fact that, and I don't want to say this, I don't want to say this about any club. The club is dependent upon the generosity of Tony Bloom, and that is both a strength and a risk, as you would do any risk assessment within a business.
But one thing that isn't standing still here, Kieran, is the fact that PSR is going and it's being replaced by SCR and SSR. So what are they?
Yeah, I mean SSR, just ignore it. It's just a bit of housekeeping. The
Southern
squad
Sounds
cost.
Radio.
Yes, the squad cost ratio that what we were replacing PSR with, and this is something that the Albion opposed, by the way. And the Albion say they opposed it for X, and in my opinion, they opposed it for Y, in
Well,
terms of the
can you
rationale.
explain what it is, and if you can, let us know what the Albion's concern about it was.
Right. What it effectively says is that if you take for every £100 that the club generates through ticket sales, through merchandise sales, broadcasting, commercial, match day, the full works, plus effectively a third of your profits from player sales, you take that number and you cannot spend more than 85 pence in the pound on that on your player costs. So your player costs could be the player wages, not the non-player wages, plus how we deal with transfer fees. I don't want to bore people with amortization, but if you sign a £30 million player on a 5-year contract, you say 30 divided by 5, it's costing me £6 million a year. And player write downs. So the Albion, Fulham, Bournemouth, Palace, Leeds, and Bournemouth were all opposed to this, but it went through on a 14-6 majority. You have to have a two-thirds majority. So it was on the barest of majorities that this was passed. The bigger clubs wanted it. The Albion, I think their public position is that they're opposed to it because they feel that it reduces the special sauce that the Albion have. Tony's special sauce, which is through Jamestown Analytics and through Star Lizard, the ability to spot players like Carlos Belaba, like Karu Mitoma, like Jean-Paul Van Hecke for relatively low prices, and for those players to develop and flourish and be worth far more in the market in a couple of years' time. That's their stated position. I don't think that that's the case because there's still a bit of those profits that do flow through. In my view, the opposition is that under the old rules, the clubs that had just been promoted to the Premier League. So we look at Forest losing, having a 4 points penalty a couple of years ago. They were only allowed to lose £61 million, and the Albion were allowed to lose 105 because of the rules. So the rules used to disadvantage clubs who had just been promoted to the Premier
Right.
League, and under SCR, that advantage disappears. And we've got to be honest, as much as we're having a bit of a, lots of fans are in a bit of winch, oh, we're 12th. The Albion's first objective at the start of each season is to finish 17th or above. And if the clubs that have just been promoted have a can have a stronger financial position compared to the old rules, you can absolutely understand why the Albion are opposed to it.
Yeah, but the league is currently it's very concertinaed, and we still have really, really good possibility that we could qualify for Europe still. I mean, we could win the FA Cup still. So those are that would be European qualification. But one thing that I know that Albion fans are concerned about, and I'm sure you can put their minds at rest, Kieran, is the fact that obviously with Tony's interest in Hearts and Hearts doing so well and possibly even going to be winning the SPL, and if they qualify for Europe, I mean, and they don't necessarily automatically qualify for the Champions League, so they could end up in, for instance, the Europa League. And if Albion are in the Europa League, what does that mean?
It means absolutely nothing because Tony, being Tony, the reason why Tony, one of the many reasons why Tony Bloom is so brilliant is that he spots icebergs before anybody else. So therefore, as far as his investment in Hearts is concerned, it's below the 30% threshold. So therefore, it's not deemed to be a club which will be part of an MCO, and therefore he would not be obliged to have to go down perhaps the same route that we saw with USG. So there's nothing to fear whatsoever. And also, I know that some fans on social media think that Tony's focus has moved away from the Albion. Let me just put the numbers into context. He put £110 million into Brighton Hove Albion, and he put £10 million into Hearts.
Yeah. And the good news is the club also check their emails. So,
Yes.
that's
Yeah,
a good thing.
exactly. I mean, if we're going to have a, because we had a damn good gloat with Vicky Reece last week. Let's rewind to the beginning of the season then, and were Palace going to be in Europe? It's not actually rocket science, especially when this was a rule that's been has been writ large. I mean, can anyone understand what on earth they were doing up there?
I think it's a sign of poor governance. I think it's a sign of poor. Somebody has to take responsibility for this. And I think the disappointing thing for me, and I have said on many occasions, Crystal Palace won the FA Cup. Crystal Palace should be playing in the Europa League.
I agree
End of story.
wholeheartedly agree with that. They should be in. It's their right.
But
But
it's a self-inflicted wound. They knew that there were issues with Textor. The least they should have done is been in contact with UEFA and try to preempt this. That's what Tony Bloom would have done. That Brighton Hove Albion do risk assessments all the time. Crystal Palace, and this isn't a dig at Crystal Palace because I
oh,
work
go on,
closely with
dig,
Kevin.
dig, dig, go on.
And let's face it, they found Eze, they found Elise, they found Wharton, they found Mehete. They have recruited extremely well. In the past few years, and they do deserve a lot of credit for it. I do think at times they are a bit laissez-faire when it comes to the boring stuff, which I think the likes of the Albion and Brentford and Bournemouth are actually very good at.
Well, there we go. We are good at something. So that it's official. Kieran Maguire has said so. And I'm sure he's going to say a lot
Good enough
more
for
when he
me.
comes back on the Albion Roar. But that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you so much to Alan Ware. Thank you to Kieran Maguire. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We're online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.